For August the 29th, 2014, we talk about Metrico, Amazon's Twitch acquisition, and we continue last week's free play multiplayer. Welcome to the 73rd level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We got the crew back together again. It was nice having Jala, but I'm happy to have you back too, Dennis.
Yeah, I we were talking about this before we kind of went on air, quote unquote, that I always love, even though it sucks to miss recording sessions, I always love listening to the ones that I miss. Because it's always just fun to hear it when you don't know what's going to happen next. And Jala killed it. She was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So it's really good to be here recording. Usually we begin this first section with a story, and this week is no different. So last week, Ben, when we were talking about books, you recommended Gödel Escherbach again.
Yeah.
And I was on, I went on Amazon during the recording. And I added it to my cart, and then I clicked, okay, cool, order. And so, like, 2 days later, because I have Amazon Prime, I received a gigantic box.
This is just volume one of Gödel Escherbach, yes.
it's a gigantic box. Took up, like the profile of most of my front door. I was like, huh, that's pretty weird. Like, it's pretty light. So I opened it up, and there's, like, a copy of Gödel Escherbach sitting on top of it. I didn't realize that there was also something else in my cart before I hit accept.
Which was
a 32-pack of toilet paper.
The bare necessities. Yep.
So two great things that go great together.
No, oh god, you monster. And that's why I take exception to this, because I was looking at how expensive it would be to have a bunch of paper shipped to my house and cardboard, and just straight up be a Captain Planet villain. And I added it to my cart because there was a coupon applied, and I let it sit. And so there's somebody in an Amazon packing center in Kentucky. It's just crazy hot in there, so hot. And he has to pack 32 rolls of toilet paper in a big box, along with a crazy book about math and shit.
Well, it would make more sense if it was literally about math and shit.
To be fair, I actually used to work in an old warehouse as my summer job, That would not be the weirdest thing I've ever done. I think the weirdest one for me is I'm pretty sure I sent a rubber chicken to the U.S. Embassy in Tokyo.
That's a good joke. Yeah.
That was a joke.
So that's a little bit of follow up. Haven't read it yet. It looks good. but yeah, I just toilet paper's like crazy cheap on Amazon. I can see the appeal.
Everything's cheap down here.
Fun fact. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't quite get I don't know. I can't wrap my mind around the, like, buying normal stuff from Amazon. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just, like, grocery store stuff.
I mean, like, there's a certain appeal. Like, I buy my soap on Amazon because there's a particular kind that I like and I can get it on a pretty regular basis. I don't know. Like, if it is something, relatively basic that you just know you're going to need every once in a while, you can set it up on a recurring. That's a quick life hack for you. Use a website for its intended purpose. Life hacks.
And use our link while you're using the website.
Yeah. I'm going to see all this toilet paper popping up. We're starting a wave. Well, we got a little bit of a late start, so I just wanted to start up with that anecdote, that little bit of fast follow-up, and let's go on to the brief, why don't we? And then, some multiplayer, and then some grind.
Whoa, we're doing the full show tonight. All right.
I suppose. Are we? So time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in this world, this crazy, shitty world that we're in, with awful things happening all the time. But we're going to try and keep it light. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer?
Oh, I have a great light story.
Okay.
So the NRSC, the National Republican Senatorial Committee, has released a video game.
What is that? Like GOP or something?
I don't even know how to. Oh, I guess it's GOP, spelled G-I-O-P-I, the elephant. And it is a platformer in which you, you have to watch for job-destroying taxers and jump on them to suppress high taxes, and then dodge the false and empty rhetoric of mudslingers. And they put it out, supposedly to appeal to millennials or something, to play online. You have to give an email account, but it doesn't have to be a real email account. They don't know how to set it up to verify that sort of thing, so you can just make something up.
I saw that they were pushing for a social media login, and I was like, no, fuck that. I won't do that even for comedy value.
Yeah. But it's just kind of hilarious to me that there was a similar story in Israel, where I guess Hamas put out a song that was supposed to like strike fear into the heart of Israelites, and it's just the most random piece of crap you've ever heard. Like at one point they literally just shout in English "volcano" for no apparent reason. But
you say volcano for military reasons?
Yeah, like, and it's like the worst. Like you couldn't write this stuff to kind of like kill the infidels and we will win. And but like Israelites apparently love it, and it's been like mixed into all these like dance mix. It's number one on the Israeli charts. So I kind of see that being what's happening here. It is kind of 8-bit in style, and it should be noted that that is not necessarily a retro R-E-T-R-E-A-U-X style. It's just that is the best technology they were aware of when they made it. So
I'm looking at it. It might actually be Game Maker default assets.
Oh, please, 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 please let that be the case.
That is, wow. Like, I love what the internet has done, and like, remix culture, like any kind of like cultural war, it's so easy. Like every grenade is like made of Nerf, so you can pick it up and just throw it right back.
But yeah, just the lack of self-awareness or any sort of lack of any sort of context for how this would be received is really kind of hilarious.
The kids like the video games these days. I started as dodgy old white man and ended up as Jimmy Stewart.
But yeah, so that's mine. That's a nice little nude lightener.
GOP.
GOP.
What do you think of that, Ben?
GOP and making a video game. Smart.
No, it's literally like that's his name. It's like Giuseppe. GOP is the name of the elephant. The main character's an elephant. He's stomping on taxers.
Yeah.
That is delightful. I've got one.
Sure.
Yeah. So you know how we were all afraid of Google buying Twitch?
Oh god.
I'm actually kind of excited. So Amazon is buying Twitch for $970 million.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, that is a lot, but it's, you know, right around the $1 billion that YouTube was rumored to be offering. I think that's pretty good. I trust Amazon with matters of infrastructure more.
Well, than, yeah, 30% of the internet is Amazon.
Right. So that says a lot for their ability to kind of keep it up and running. I know that they're good with web services and whatnot.
I see. They're a great web service company. They're a horrible service company, I would posit.
How so?
That I think, and this is kind of a, you know, maybe colored by other experience I've had, but they're really good engineers. They're great at, you know, finding new technology. Mm-hmm. And so I trust them from, like you said, from an infrastructure point. I don't think they'll like run it into the ground from a technology point, but they don't seem just as a company to have a focus on improving things once they've launched them. They kind of do the, let's get it out there and you know, see how it works, and then they kind of forget about it and move on to the next thing. So
more so than Google?
I don't know.
I mean, like Google
Before
has...
Before you answer that, consider Glass.
Yeah, or reader, or like Google, they get
frugal.
Intense. Yeah, frugal. The good. I think Google Books is the only is like one that's like maybe a little bit on the edge. Like Google's really they tend to pick up a pet hobby and then just drop it like it's hot like two days later. Like they just they like YouTube is their like YouTube and AdWords are their bread and butter. And I don't know, Google being primarily an ad company, I'm uncomfortable with them and owning any kind of content distribution more so than they already do. Whereas Amazon is more of like a logistics company. if you look behind all this stuff, Amazon is about getting things from point A to point B, and Google is about monetizing people who pay attention to things, right? I would rather one of those be in charge.
Sure.
Yeah.
To be fair, Google basically paying engineers, you are paying them for attention span. And Google is what happens when you have engineers with enough money that they don't need to care if you pay them for attention span.
Yeah. So there's something weird. There were some press releases and stuff that went out talking about how Amazon and Twitch have a shared vision for the gaming industry. I'm not quite sure what that means.
I'm just imagining the scene with like Emperor Palpatine and Darth Vader in the throne room.
Yeah.
I have a good vision.
Amazon wants to sell all the games, and Twitch wants to let's play all the games.
Maybe. Let's see here. So. Guy with the last name of Frizzini from Amazon said, obviously, if we're going to be in the devices business, we have to be thinking hard about games. And at the center of that is the customer experience, which is what's so interesting about Twitch for us. Twitch has the same point of view. They think long term. I'm very resistant to the notion of Amazon being a devices company, because outside of like the EE and Kindles, none of their devices have been any good.
Yeah.
That's actually what I'm wondering is what are like the other things Amazon, you know, they have Amazon, the website, Amazon AWS, Kindle, what are kind of their other plates they have spinning?
Yeah, the Kindle Fire, the Kindle phone or the Fire phone or whatever that is. They've okay. got Amazon Fire TV. Yeah, and just a myriad of other kind of services they have. The streaming video service, which is actually really good. Like, I mean, they gave me The Wire, and for that I owe them at least something. me and Ben owe them a debt of service. But yeah, I think that in general, anything that they've dipped into that involves hardware, I guess the Fire TV is pretty good. But yeah, it's just kind of weird. But that customer-centric attitude, if that's not just rhetoric, that is pretty good.
Sure.
I yeah. I know. I would say in general, I don't know how to say this, not being that guy or whatever, but I feel like anything that isn't just, like, further concentrating ownership of media is probably a good thing. Mm-hmm. And so considering that Amazon, for the most part, isn't a media company right now, I feel like that's a good thing.
It's interesting, and it's definitely like a fake out. They're like, okay, there's smoke here around Google, there's smoke around YouTube, like Twitch is changing a bunch of their policies, and now it's pretty clear they were trying, they like they changed their policies to make themselves more attractive to a potential buyer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like I get the sense that this was actually like a really last minute kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. They had two dates to the dance. Yeah. David, how about
two dates to the dance, and apparently both of them are smoking. That's what I'm getting from this metaphor.
Yeah. You know, I just kind of cycle through them until one makes sense.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh man, David, how about you? You got a story?
Have you seen the I don't know if this is something you guys gonna talk about on maybe Bonfire, but have you seen the mod someone put out to add the Diablo 3's Skeleton King to Dark Souls?
No.
Huh. Yeah, someone modded in a boss from Diablo 3 into Dark Souls. So, apparently kind of the interesting thing is the guy apparently created his own like suite of mod software that, you know, can go into the game and, you know, extract the various game bits. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about how games work. And,
you know, the game bits.
Yeah, you know, the game spleen and the game liver and, you know, all those things. And, you know, he can then manipulate him. And what he does is basically it replaces the mesh, the, you know, 3D stuff of one of the existing bosses with the Diablo 3 boss. So he's currently looking into, he wants to, currently it uses just the same moveset as the original enemy, but he's looking at, he wants to change that up, but that's like a big, that's highly difficult because you have to learn, what system do they use? Is it Havoc Engine?
Yeah, it's Havoc.
Yeah, so,
Do you know which boss they replaced with the Skeleton King? I mean, Nito would be the obvious fit, but...
Yeah,
No, it has to be the Skeleton Lords.
I mean, like, is it Dark Souls 1 or 2?
Dark Souls 1.
Okay.
And I don't know. I haven't been able to tell... Like, it's not a part of the game I've been to. So, I mean...
Centipede Demon.
Is it?
I'm sorry. No, I'm guessing it. What would be... I said that with very much. I said that with a lot of confidence. Yeah. I know. I was trying to think of where would make sense to put a Skeleton Lord. And with, one, the Centipede Demon is just generally pretty crappy.
Okay.
And two, the arena is perfect.
I'm going to like tell things about the. Okay, looks like. I have no idea.
Two words, one syllable.
Let's see here. Oh yeah, this is Artorias.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it replaces Artorias with the Skeleton King, which I can appreciate. And that's a great boss fight too. Just like reskin Artorias as a skeleton guy. Huh. I like that. This is a welcome addition to my world, David. Thank you.
So this welcome. This is funny because officially they're putting The Last of Us characters into Diablo 3.
Yeah.
They're putting Diablo 3 characters into Dark Souls, so the only logical conclusion is that there will be Dark Souls, some kind of Dark Souls shout-out in The Last of Us at some point in the near future.
Huh.
Close the loop.
Oh, I was hoping in StarCraft.
Okay, every game, look to your left. Put something from you in them.
No, look, you're right. One of these games will never see release.
Resident Evil 6 and Left 4 Dead also swapped characters.
Huh.
Nice.
Neat. Hey, Ben, you got a story?
Yeah, I did. I did some last-minute scrambling. it's on The Walking Dead, Season 2, Episode 5. Mm. Came out today. And it got lukewarm reviews.
Yeah, so. It's in line with the whole season, the things that I've read. Haven't played it. It's on my system, man.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So the last time we talked on like, you know, about these things, episode 4 of Walking Dead and the first Dark Souls DLC had come out on the same day as well. So I think that like that is crazy that that happened just the same at the same time, a month apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really sensitive to spoilers. Did you see any details about what they were saying?
Nope. I know nothing about season 2. I would like to keep it that way. I think this will be next on docket, and I'll probably be disappointed. So,
if you want a Walking Dead game to cleanse your palate and not be horrible, Zen Studios just put out the Walking Dead pinball table, and they do fantastic work, and I trust them implicitly. So, yeah. go get that instead of the final episode of The Walking Dead season 2.
Okay, so lukewarm isn't horrible. I would urge us to use a little bit of moderation in our appraisal of things.
The problem is why here lukewarm. I'm thinking of the 8 to 10 video game average or rating scale, so that anything that gets like a 7 or below is just utter crap.
When I hear lukewarm, I think of Dennis's baby.
Yeah, what I was going to say is I'm the guy who didn't read the final chapter of the Dark Tower series, So I have no problem at all saying, you know, Walking Dead season one was excellent and I absolutely loved it. End sentence, full stop. And hearing that, you know, I'm just going to be mildly disappointed with season two at best.
Man,
I'll just skip it.
You can't take the good with the bad?
No, it's just I don't feel like I have to eat the entire cake when it's set in front of me. Like I can eat until I'm full, and then I'll be happy.
No, but I guess what I'm saying is a piece of media that
what
you have to consume that you have to consume from beginning to end, that you will avoid anything worthwhile inside of that for to the exclusion of maybe it not being as good as this thing that you once did.
If I had nothing else to play, I would play it.
What's the best game you've ever played, Dennis?
What?
What's the best game you've ever played?
Oh God, I'd have to think about it.
Yeah. Okay, so the follow-up question. I'm sorry, I've got my dander up about this particular line of thought.
I'm confused. I'll say The Last of Us.
Okay.
I was trying to anticipate where you're going with the question.
Have you played any games after that?
Oh sure, yeah.
Okay, cool.
But then again, my time for playing a game is very limited right now and probably at all points in the future. So if I was on a desert island and all that I had to play was The Walking Dead Season 2, I would happily play it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, given a world of infinitely more choices than that, and given how happy I was with the way Season 1 ended, mm-hmm. I'm happy to let that be my end to The Walking Dead story.
Hmm. Yeah, because
I feel a better question would be why your desert island has electricity.
Dennis, I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times, that is a clearing that they forgot to turn the power off. That isn't water around it, it is just streets. Streets is not water, Dennis. Yeah, I don't know. Hmm. Yes. Again, sorry to get my dander up about that. For as much as I wish that season two was better, and I can see the obvious ways it is, you know, either the shine has come off that apple and the tricks that it's doing will no longer work, much in the same way that if I had played something like The Walking Dead and, you know, gone on to play season one, like maybe Seeing the Strings or whatever. Like there, you know, I think that there's still enough to recommend it to somebody who liked the first one. You know, for looking for more stuff that is, you know, successful in a similar way, except not, you know, to not as great of a degree.
Here's a question. Would you rather have me play Walking Dead, the video game season two, or would you rather have me go start like the first trade of the comic book series?
I'd rather have you start the first trade of the comic series, honestly.
Yeah. Okay. There. Yeah. So we found a point.
I feel like, is this becoming like that weird game? Like, would you rather play, Dark Souls Season 2 or kiss your own mother? Okay, that actually wouldn't be a horrible... You know what I mean, though. There's some games. Uh-huh. I don't know why. Apparently, I have some horrible phobia of kissing my mother. So,
Dennis, I have the first compendium. I have, in fact, I have every, all of Walking Dead. So,
did I give you back the first couple from the Dark Tower series?
Maybe. I don't know how much of my stuff you have.
I think I dropped it off with you at some point when we were both drunk or something like that. Anyway, I think it might have been the same night I stole all the other games. So I feel fine taking that from you, knowing that I've returned the other stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Capitalism.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on this too much further, but you're right, that did come out and critics are unhappy with it. I feel weird defending this without having played it through to the end. I think that maybe it's sunk cost fallacy and I would just like to see it through because I am invested in these characters and have been since season one. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
It's time for the multiplayer where you participate with us in junk. So we're continuing. We did a pretty long multiplayer segment last time, but we didn't get through all of your free play.
We only got like halfway.
Yeah, we did. So we're going to be dipping back into some of those as soon as I load the page back up, because apparently I can't control myself from closing tabs.
must purge.
So,
is that like the browser equivalent of zero inbox?
Maybe a little bit. Okay, so if I don't occasionally prune, then I end up with 5 windows with 25 tabs apiece. So,
oh my God, my wife does it, and I have a stress attack just trying to use her computer for anything, because there's easily, like, it's not a joking number, 25 tabs open at any given time.
Ugh. The worst. Okay, Dennis, as somebody who listened to the show last time, did we do Murphs about FMV games?
We did not. That was the cutoff point.
Okay, yep. Cool. So I'll go ahead and take us in with Murph. Murph Murphy writes on the Facebook page, I guess FMV games are in the zeitgeist with Night Trap kickstarting, etc. I watch a Let's Play and I don't understand FMV at all. Do you get that genre? And if you do, what would you like to see made?
What is FMV?
So full motion videos. Think something from the mid-90s where the in thing was to take actual footage of a person and integrate it into the game or make that the entire game. So think
X-Files video game, PlayStation.
Yeah, exactly.
Seven discs.
You get to David Duchovny up in there.
Yeah, or Rebel Assault 2, The Hidden Empire, which was my jam.
I played that.
It was freaking fantastic. I think part of the reason that I loved it was I think it was the first narratively driven game that I'd ever played.
Yeah.
And it's just because they had all these actors who wanted to act, there was a lot more story to it than I'd seen anywhere else. And it felt, at the time, like a whole other Star Wars movie that I actually got to contribute to, which was it was like the perfect intersection of my video game and my Star Wars nerddom at the time.
Yeah, I fucking loved that game because it came out right around the time. I mean, so I imagine for all of us, the 90s re-releases were what kind of like really spurred Star Wars on us a little bit. And that came out like right around that same time.
Yeah.
What system was it for?
PC. Maybe there's a PlayStation one as well.
There's a PlayStation edition. It was only two discs.
Hmm.
But it was specially, what's the claim on the box here? Custom PlayStation edition.
Dennis, I love your insinuation that they didn't actually mean there to be any plot, but when you get a whole bunch of actors, you just can't stop them from acting.
When there's an actor over the mantle in the first act, he's gonna have a monologue in the third.
What's he doing up there? Did a bully hang him there?
So does this FMV, does that include like I really loved some of the some of the arcade light gun shooters
maybe it does. I don't know, like it depends on how loose your definition is, because like Mortal Kombat technically is digitized photos of actors, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
I can't say like for the actual genre can't say that I have any memories of it, but this is something that I wish this would become like the next like indie game, like making everything 8-bit is cool. I would like to see some people just adopt the FMV just as a visual style, because I kind of like it.
Yeah. What's weird is it seems strange to me to call it a genre, because it is a technological fixation or like a graphical style, right? Which really goes in and informs the like what you can actually do with the game, right? Like Night Trap is just a bunch of scenes that you flip back and forth in and can minimally interact with.
So the Yogg could have been FMV.
Maybe.
You the man now, Yogg. Okay, good. Phew. Just wanted to get that off my chest. You the man now, Yogg. I just wanted to say that.
Okay. Were you just like shouting that in your car?
Literally, I was. I was like, damn, I know you're all thinking it.
No, I wasn't. Yeah.
Well, I was.
Like, I get it. I love the appeal of getting a lot of really bad actors in and just kind of like, okay, we only have the budget for like one take. That's what that's part of what makes Gabriel Knight 2 so great. We did that Watch Out for Fireballs on it, and that is a delightful experience to see those actors interacting with each other. Like there's something special about it. And I was about to say, well, we have the technology to do it right. Like we have, video compression, H.264 is pretty great. We have HD cameras, like everybody has one of those on their hip. Like maybe we could do that like at a high I wouldn't want them to do it at a high production value. I want it to be like straight up community theater people. like lean into it. Lean into all the things that make it endearing, because otherwise if it takes itself too seriously, you lose what people love about those.
So they should make The Room, the video game?
Kind of.
There we go. I was literally about to ask, what's the movie that has like the same footage of the Golden Gate Bridge used 63 times?
go.
Ben, did you dig up any examples of these that you liked?
Of FMVs?
Yeah.
X-Files.
Oh, yeah.
I don't need another one, dude. X-Files.
There's a great series of videos that are going up on Polygon of Justin McElroy loves FMV games, and he's outspoken about it whenever the topic comes up. So he is playing through FMV games and forcing Griffin to watch along with him. And they're pretty great. Part. Yeah. Because Griffin is having none of it. Oh, gosh. Let's see here. David, what's Christopher say?
Christopher says, what games do you find yourself going back to year after year? Every few years, I replay Final Fantasy VI, A Link to the Past, and Chrono Trigger. Partly because I love these games, but also because they're easy to pick up and play with DS and Game Boy Advance releases. Are there any games you'd play again if it were easier to get to them?
Yeah. How about you, David? Any recurring missions?
Kingdom of Loathing?
Yeah.
Sure.
I honestly, I beat relatively few games, and I tend to be very much... I tend to be, I want to see the story, and I get through it, and then I'm done. So that tends not to be in my nature that much. I'm trying to think if there are any, but yeah. None's really coming to mind.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So watching Portal 2 be played a couple weeks ago, I would totally play through that game again. And same thing with Portal 1, same thing with Knights of the Old Republic. There are a few gems in my collection that, although the Knights of the Old Republic, I'm kind of restricted by not having an Xbox, so... Mm. That's the only hold up with that, but yep. But yeah. So I'd play games like that I really really like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Shadow of the Colossus. I thought about that the other day. I need to go back and play through that again because I haven't played through that since I think college, so like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
The Jack games.
Oh yeah.
I absolutely love them, and I go back to them every once in a while, and I think. Are they out on Vita? I know they're out on PS3.
They've gotten to a fugue state with those HD re-releases.
Yeah,
a little while back.
They are out on Vita now. So that might make it even easier for me to go back and play again.
Yeah.
But it looks like just doing some quick searches that maybe the port was not the best. So
yeah. You know what? That kind of seems like something they would do on a PS2 Classics.
Oh yeah, and there's that would definitely be worthwhile.
Yeah. For me, my big thing was to go through. I used to play every survival horror game that I owned. Over the course of
No.
And now you're just going back and playing every survival horror game.
Every single one, yeah. Very, very, very slowly. No, but I would play Resident Evil 1, 2, all the way up through 4 and all the side stuff, and I do Silent Hill, and just that would just be a recurring thing that I did back when I, didn't have the resources to buy a bunch of new games. Now, I have no time to do anything.
Yeah.
So I kind of wish that I had that ritual because I do that with television. I have shows that I just cycle back through. I watch all of Twin Peaks, once a year. I used to watch all of The Simpsons season 3 through 10 once a year.
Didn't they just do a complete marathon of The Simpsons?
Yes, they did. That is crazy. Also, I just did that too. So
you are crazy.
Yeah. No, but no, I like those rituals. I like knowing I'm going to watch all of King of the Hill. At some point in the course of year, I'm in the middle. But so between watching The Wire and watching Deadwood, I'm just going back and watching all of Community again, Yeah. But not so much with games anymore because my game time is that is homework. Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what's Omgamus say?
He asks, are there any games that you feel are only worth playing with others? And the opposite, are there any that are only worth playing alone? And in case it's not obvious, it should include games that actually have the option for both.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there are some single-player games that benefit from, having somebody else in the room with you. Portal, right?
Yeah, Portal 2. I don't know if I would say better, but Shadow of the Colossus, that was definitely...
It was a very good way to experience that.
Although that's not technically, that doesn't give you an option to play with someone else. That's, is it fun to spectate? Yes or no?
Yeah.
But not to shoot down your answer. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I like playing Rock Band by myself, but it is definitely a lot more fun with other people.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So only worth playing. I don't know. Like, yeah. If it's like, I think that the default answer that we can probably rule out as well is it a game that has like that has quote unquote single player, but it's really just multiplayer with bots, a la Shadowrun.
Yeah, sure.
For 360, and most of those shooters, then that becomes a problem.
Yeah, I would say, I'm sure there's a lot of games that are much better as multiplayer, but the one that really I feel like would be just soul crushing playing as you're on your own is Army of Two.
Oh man, yeah. I have only ever played the Rayman games multiplayer. Nice. And I cannot imagine playing them alone, to the point where I got it for free on the Vita and I was like, oh, cool. I can, you know, go back through Origins. I haven't played it for a while and I couldn't do it. So that's definitely one that I'd recommend. It's completely functional playing it on your own, but it is way more fun playing with two.
Yeah.
Oh, and also I got the platinum for that, or Jen and I got the platinum for that today,
nice.
Right before we started the show. So I'm not going to talk about it on the grind. Just because that's all I have to say about it. But mm-hmm. Hell yeah, just under a year's worth of effort, we got the platinum.
Congratulations.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Ben, how about you?
Sorry.
Didn't mean to cut you off, David. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, on the other side of the thing, games that should only be played alone, for me, I'd say one of the weird things is I kind of feel that way about a lot of the multiplayer shooters, like co-op shooters and MMOs, in that if you care about the storyline, playing with someone else, particularly pickup grouping with someone else, just involves them running to exactly where you have to go for the next objective and like waiting for you while you actually watch the cutscenes and talk to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I totally agree. Do not play Borderlands or Borderlands 2 multiplayer until you've beaten it. And then it's a ton of fun once you've beaten it and everyone's just running to the next point, because then it becomes this kind of, you know, how can I show off? How fast can we get this done?
Yeah.
And all that stuff. The other one I would say is Trine and Trine 2. Which are really cool in that they're kind of designed around being a multiplayer puzzle game, but don't play it when one of you knows all the answers and one of you doesn't, because it's very hard for someone, kind of the opposite of Ben watching Portal 2. I played it with Jala multiplayer. She had, you know, done it. She could do it in her sleep, and it was very hard for her to kind of hold back and watch me be an idiot and bumble around when she knew exactly what we needed to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was just kind of waiting for her.
Yeah. So. That gives me a panic attack. Like the idea of like even playing something like Resident Evil 5 or 6 with somebody else, I just get anxious at the idea of like inconveniencing somebody, which is what I would do. Like, because, you know, not so much because I would die or whatever, I'm bad at video games, but more like, I like to go at my own pace and like see what's going on over here, or, you know, go about something in an a way that seems unintuitive to somebody else, but is actually really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And I just don't want to put somebody else through that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Ben, you have something that's not Portal.
I do. Yeah, I do. Okay. Smash Brothers, all variants. Mm-hmm. Typically want to play that multiplayer. I don't see much of a point playing it single player, but that's just me. Along the same lines, Dr. Mario. I don't see a lot of point playing it single player. There's another puzzle-like game from what you guys were discussing that I thought of another one, but I forget it. So I'm going to say, oh yeah, I remember in about 30 seconds.
Okay. We'll just blurt it out at some point once you remember it.
All right.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, I think it's your turn. What's Jeffrey say?
Jeffrey says, why?
You know.
Why?
You know.
I feel like this is a dad moment. I could practice and say, because I said so. Now you're not the boss. Eat your peas.
What's that voice?
It's my dad voice, apparently.
That's actually how he talks to Luke all the time.
So, Dennis,
are you comfortable with us saying your kid's name on the air?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's okay. Luke Robert. I think he's fantastic, and I'll probably plaster photos all over everything if you give me half a chance. So I want everyone to know him. I think he's awesome.
So I was thinking about this earlier today where I was like, because like a couple months ago, I was like, man, Dennis is about to have the baby. The dad thing's going to be over then. Mm-hmm. But then I realized today when I was driving home, it's like, nah, that's going to go on for another 18 years or so.
It's really only appropriate that I'm writing it now.
Yeah, exactly.
When it was, it's kind of like when it was about to turn over from 2009 to 2010, I was thinking, oh no, the millennium's going to be over. But then I realized, no, the millennium's not going to be over until 3000. Like, Will's got tons of time left to go.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Wait, what the heck's a millennium?
No, I like it. So in I believe it was 1998 or 1999, around the time that we had Y2K fever, Will Smith put out an album called The Millennium, which kind of laid out his plans for society over the next 1,000 years. and he was playing a longer game than I thought he was.
Which surely a visionary.
Yeah. Since it's apropos, I'll give a quick update on the dadding. I'm really happy and really proud of the stuff that's up there right now. Mm-hmm. I'm still kind of behind on months because I'm going month by month. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to the month in which I had a stroke. I need to figure out how to do that justice. So I'm kind of stuck on that. And then plus I had Luke. So that's taking up a lot of my time.
Yeah.
So that will obviously, you know, I'll continue to post to that. I'm just trying to figure out how to do it justice without being a huge downer, which I think there's definitely a way to do. So, but yeah, so check it out. I'm very happy with what's up there so far. And I've got the next several posts after the current one I'm working on planned and partially written. It's just this one is obviously the start of many major life changes that happened over the past 2 or 3 months. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what's happening in the dadding.
Cool. That is at dutchme.tv/thedadding. Journey? There we go.
Journey. Should play it by yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great...
Yeah, that's...
That's very true.
Any game that... Like, I couldn't imagine playing Dear Esther, like, to the moon. Like, any game where I'm going to cry. I about added, like, a ... at the end of that, just to emphasize how ridiculous it is. But, like, I don't know if I want to go through, like, a really, you know, intense emotional experience with somebody.
So you're saying you want to Twitch stream Dear Esther?
Yeah, that might be pretty funny, actually.
It's a beautiful video of a beautiful hallway.
It gets to me so many times. The Last of Us, I don't know. Any game that deals with like crazy moral issues is...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Dennis, did you play The Walking Dead with Jenna in the room?
I did not. However, fun story. I finished it right as her parents came over, and they literally found me just sobbing, like not even like cool crying, but like a hot mess, sobbing on the couch. I was like, "Hi guys, I'm just wrapping this up. I'll be going to the kitchen. I'll be with you in a second." It's so good to see That's you. Sweet.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine like playing any game where like the NPC says, "What the hell?" Like, and having somebody like right next to me in stereo going, "What the hell? I can't believe you've done this."
You monster.
Let's kind of power through the rest of these because we're coming up on time.
Sure.
And I want to make sure that we do justice. However, it would be kind of cool if we had enough of these to just always have them. But I like putting questions to the audience as well. So Christopher Slee says, what game made you feel the most uncomfortable, whether it's something very explicit going on or just a really touchy subject?
I'll go Bioshock Infinite DLC, the end. Spec Ops the Line.
Yeah.
Ooh, Spec Ops the Line is a good one.
That is pretty good. Hotline Miami, I think in general is just really gross, and it crosses that line over glorifying the violence into making it something that is just genuinely unpleasant. That and there are a multitude of like survival horror games that are really gross with let's just say sexual exploitation of the weak, not just like minors or whatever, but like Haunting Ground. You are an unarmed young woman running away from people who are very clearly meaning to do horrible things to you. And that plays into, you know, like a natural fear, and like I have a reason to run from these things because I don't want to see what happens when they catch me. But that is, you know, objectionable subject matter that, you know, is very much intentional. Same thing with like Silent Hill 3 and its whole subplot about like, oh, now I'm pregnant with a demon. Anything that kind of equates like pregnancy and motherhood with, you know, it being invaded by an alien force is kind of gross to me. But, yeah. Didn't mean to like blurred a bunch of answers there. How about you, Dennis?
No, I'm trying to think of the most uncomfortable. Spec Ops: The Line is up there, but it's not in like a, yeah, I guess it's on the touchy subject side versus kind of being overly explicit. It's very hard to find a game, and I feel like in general, just where like violence or whatever is so over the top that it gets to me.
Yeah. Which is, but how do you react to like pictures like of the aftermath of actual violence? Because I can't stand looking at it. Like I have to look away.
Yeah, that's it. Anything with gore is, I can't do at all, but I'm fine with it in video games. Like it's the weird dichotomy. So I guess I'll just go with Spec Ops: The Line.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Well, first I have to say spiders and head crabs in general. Spec Ops: The Line is definitely one. A lot of the death scenes in Tomb Raider. And I would say the one that didn't bother me at the time, it was very much like fridge logic, after the fact, is pretty much all the more choices in Army of Two.
Oh, yeah. Oh, can I say preemptively Battlefield Hardline?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no way it's okay for that game to come out now.
Yeah, there's no way that is at all defensible in the public. God damn. Like, you know when they announced that, there was like a crazy militarized police chase happening right outside the convention center?
Yeah.
And for a moment, they tried to like lean into that as like, this is what the world's like now, but it's not a good thing, dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of forgot all about the game, and then I was like, holy shit, this cannot be a thing anymore.
No. Refactor it. Put it back in. let's see. David, what's Sam say?
Sam says, are there any games that you enjoyed but have no desire to ever play through a second time? For example, David Cage recommended only playing Heavy Rain once, which is something I decided to agree with.
I agree that that game should only be played once, but not because of like any cool stylistic reason, because it falls apart if you make the other choices. Yeah. But
I feel like it's that way with most choice games, because I immediately thought of The Walking Dead Season 1.
Yeah.
I feel like that was my story, and it felt just wrong. And same thing with Heavy Rain to a lesser extent. Yeah. Just felt disingenuous to me to go back and try to exploit it just to see all the content, when clearly so much of the appeal is that it kind of, you know, reacts to you making choices in the moment.
Yeah. In a similar vein, I don't really feel the need to play through any of the Mass Effect games again. I enjoyed those, and I liked the experience, and I played through 1 and 2, I think a couple times a piece, maybe a little bit more. And maybe 3 broke me a little bit. But I feel like I've experienced that story, and I just don't. Yeah, maybe it's also because it's incredibly long, but anything that is like that linear, and I think really it is like, if there is choice and if the choice is purely cosmetic, because like, oh, if it's like something like Fallout New Vegas, I would play that over and over again, because you actually do, you know, get put into and locked out of different quest lines depending on what you do. So I can see doing that multiple times, right?
Yeah, I would also posit Knights of the Old Republic, not sound like a broken record, but that's one where it's just fun to explore the different options.
Yeah.
Like it, but it's probably because the choice isn't the central feature of the game. It's just kind of a sidebar.
Yeah, yeah. Does anybody have an answer that they haven't said yet?
I would probably say Spec Ops: The Line, and, you know, maybe the BioShock series.
Yeah.
The first one, just because there's very much, you know, it was kind of an experience and it was a thing. I don't know if that makes sense. Like it was
unwrapping a present. And once you know what the present is, it's just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Right. And also, I mean, I would say it was a game that fairly legitimately was like, this is something that actually, like, has some effect on, like, how I think about these issues, stuff like that. And I feel like that's then not something that it makes any sense to me to redo, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then Bioshock, just because, not to be that guy, I don't think in the end Bioshock was that great of a game. Mm-hmm. I think it was a great story. I think it had some good elements. I think the gameplay kind of fell apart. Mm-hmm. There's a certain degree to which I didn't enjoy a lot of the moment-to-moment playing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go on and just like really chug through these just so we can hit it, not to do anybody a disservice. So Chad Cross asks, in a, you know, just a very boiled down sense, have you been able to turn someone into a gamer, by which he means, you know, give them a fedora and like a glass of Chianti that they're too young to really be a connoisseur of? No, it's actually turn somebody onto games who wasn't into them before. So he means particularly someone of the opposite sex or someone of a different generation, or let's just say anybody else, because I don't want to normify. And he goes on to give an example, like his wife was a PC gamer, so that doesn't really count. He says, like, it's actually probably harder to turn somebody who's older on into games, just because it is perceived as a waste of time. Like, I don't really have any success stories. Most of the people that I have encountered and played games with have already been people who played games, and that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been completely unsuccessful. The most frustrating one for me is, particularly now that games are doing a bit more narrative-heavy things, I think my father would like a lot of them. Mm-hmm. For example, he really likes, not exactly the right word, but really appreciates Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
It's like, there's this game called Spec Ops The Line that's basically... Yeah.
So that's 10 Spec Ops references. We get a free one.
Yeah.
So, it's things where, like, it's frustrating to me because it's like, I know he would enjoy these things, but I also know he could never... He's very much, like, not good at picking up new technology, stuff like that. So mm-hmm. I know that's never a thing he could really just do.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So there's a couple that I have. I got my mom to play Journey, which was a terribly interesting experience because, like, I was very much in teacher mode of not telling her how to do anything and letting her figure out for her own, since the controls are pretty easy. Yeah. And so, like, it was fun watching victories of her figuring out the jump button and how to move in the environment, you know? So that was a really interesting experience, because that's probably the only experience I've had with, like, having somebody of a different generation playing a game with them. I've had a bunch of people play Portal 2 who hadn't played video games before, and that was cool. One of my old roommates in college never played video games but was able to start and master Portal 2 and was kind of acting like a pro by the end of the game. So that was really just – that game is great to watch people play for the first time because, like, it's like a teaching lesson, you know? Like, it's it's like distilled learning, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really impressive. But then also, yeah, so Portal 2 is good, and Walking Dead, and both of those are really good to figure a person out too, because you can you can tell their intelligence and their empathy, you know, in both of those games. So
Ben, yeah. are you attempting to run people through an ad hoc VoightConf test?
VoightConf?
Yeah. I'm not, because I don't know what that is.
No, so. You know. Yes, you do. The VoightConf test. Okay, you're just sandbagging. I gotcha. All right. Oh, you see a turtle in the desert. Dennis, how about you?
I'm spectacularly bad at this. Any time where I have tried to get someone into games, I've failed miserably. And so the closest that I have come is looking at something that people already enjoy, so finding a game that they already enjoy, independent of any urging on my part, and then offering up things like it.
Yeah.
What about Jen?
No, that's totally it. I've tried and all my efforts to quote unquote get her into gaming failed spectacularly.
But you guys co-platinumed Rayman.
Yeah, like, yeah, and that happened because I, you know, after trying all these different things and her just being completely uninterested, she took a liking to New Super Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. And I wanted, you know, I wanted her to try Borderlands and all this stuff that she just was not interested in. And so the place I found success was like, hey, Rayman, even though I'd never heard of the series before, seems a lot like, you know, New Super Mario Brothers, and mm-hmm. that's where it clicked. But that was purely out of just, you know, I've evangelized games to no end, mm-hmm. And to no effect to her for a long time, and it was only when she kind of found her own stride and I was able to support that I've had any success.
Yeah,
but it's very much kind of she's owned that whole process.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's still an activity that you share together. So I would mark that in the win column. I mean, yeah, and when I say win, it's not an adversarial thing. You're not trying to beat their, you know, their resistance down. I had like a semi failed experience with it. So there's somebody at work that, like, oh, I talk about The Walking Dead with a lot because they watch the television show. And so, you know, I've been just as I read the comic series, like, okay, you take this and I'll you know, give it to her. And then, you know, it's like, okay, so you don't play video games. That's cool. The Telltale bundle is available. I'm just going to get this and have this key. If you want it, go ahead, have it. And like, I walked her through getting it installed. It's like, oh yeah, no interest. Okay, cool. Because really that's all you can do. Like with so many things, you can only ask three times and you have to do it out of genuine interest. Like I so think you would enjoy this thing, but if not, okay, cool, we'll find something else to talk about because we're adults. Mm-hmm. And this final one, just because I think it's going to be short, just because we don't have a lot of knowledge on it. But hey, Modern Jackass Magazine, we'll talk about it anyway. Gustavo J. Rivera Gonzalez, one of the best names he writes into the network. Thank you, Gustavo. What do you guys think of the long and sordid story of Final Fantasy XIV? From its frankly quite bad and shitty beginnings of 1.0 to the much better version, but still bad, 1.23, getting shut down to finally being reborn as Final Fantasy XIV, a Realm Reborn, or 2.0. God. It's an interesting story at the very least. He says he's been playing since the launch time. It's just amazing to see that Square Enix was able to make a really bad game, a really bad MMO experience, into a really good MMO experience, right?
Yeah. This is a game I've kind of wanted to play for a long time, but I've never really been able to justify getting into another MMO, especially since it's, you know, one that is not, you know, there is a priced entry. Mm-hmm. But I really think I really respect the, you know, not just like pulling the plug or something like that, like going back and being like, okay, we're going to do this right. We're going to fix this. And I think that's pretty cool.
I don't know why Square gets that kind of grace from players. Maybe it has to do with being an MMO. Maybe it has to do with it being Final Fantasy. But I can think of no other situation in which people would stand for that kind of shit.
Yeah.
See, and I actually think people would. I think it's just most companies don't do it.
That's possible, too. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's an entertaining story at the very least. And, like, it's a rare exercise in humility.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're speaking to, David, when you say most companies wouldn't. Like, that is an admission of failure. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of companies would have, you know, would try and gussy up the numbers and stick to their guns while slowly, you know, and on the back end making, you know, changes that, you know, that were relatively invisible. But Final Fantasy XIV, from the very beginning, they, like, there was such an outcry. Like, most people didn't pay to play Final Fantasy XIV because it was such a broken experience. They didn't charge subscription fees. People mm-hmm. still bought the actual, like, and, you know, they made the initial purchase, but they, you know, like they were contrite, like, right out of the gate.
I would love to see some conspiracy theory where it's like a new Coke deal where they must have done it on purpose so that people would
I'm sure that's a no, they're doing it's every other game now. So it's going to be, you know, 13 is a single player, 14 is an MMO, 15 single player, 16, at least that's what they said. who knows if that's going to bear out to be a good idea. But like, I know people who play 14. Like, there's a lady at work who just got to the level cap, which is pretty cool. You know, like, people say good things about it. Like, the thing that's keeping me from looking at it is just there's no room in my life. Yeah. Ben, what do you think?
I know nothing about this.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry. I know we're kind of running back on time, but can I step back to a previous one? I kind of had a epiphany. Game that made me incredibly uncomfortable, even though it's a great game, is the Payday series.
Yeah.
Huh. I mean, excellent game. Some of the best co-op shooters ever made, but it's basically Cop Killer the game.
Good answer.
Yeah. So that was multiplayer. Thank you, everybody, for sending those in. You came out in force, and that was a pretty good experience. Check out our Facebook pages, usually on Tuesday afternoons, for further multiplayer prompts. And yeah, we'll get back to the regularly scheduled programming after this.
And if anyone has an opinion on whether or not you would like to see the free plays more often, there's obviously nothing stopping us from doing them more often, and they're a ton of fun. So I think we'll try to do them maybe once every other month, something like that. But yeah, would love feedback on what you guys think is right.
Yeah. Yeah. So go ahead and offer that either on the Facebook page, that's facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast, or head on over to duckfeed.tv/contact and make your voices heard.
The grind.
Let's do a grind, but with a caveat, you guys.
What's the caveat?
One game apiece.
What? Oh.
One game apiece. Is that agreeable to everybody?
That is fine by me, and I want to go first, though, because I don't know when I'll need to jump.
Yes.
And I will talk about Metrico.
Yes, you will.
For literally a month to talk about this game, and it is going to happen. So, yes.
So Metrico, it is a puzzle platformer for the PS Vita.
It is a masterpiece, is what it is. And so please, please excuse just raving and completely. I'm going to be very hyperbolic about this and everything, but...
Effusive. You're going to be effusive.
Yeah. Effusive. That is perfect. Yes. So just go with me on this journey for a bit. I've had a month to think about this, so... You guys mind if I just kind of dive in on this?
No, go ahead. Do it.
Does my voice have a crazy edge yet? It sounds like I got a crazy edge.
Sounds like your eyes twitching just a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so Metrico. It's exclusive to the PS Vita. It's a puzzle platformer, like you said. It came out for free on PlayStation Plus, and I found it knowing nothing about it. Mm-hmm. So literally, I watched the video trailer for it, which is cool. And I thought, oh, puzzle platformer, I'll try it. As a puzzle game, it is some of the most innovative and kind of unique thinking that I've seen in a long time. So literally everything you do in the game becomes a form of input to solve the puzzle. So you guys remember there was a Flash game a while back that was like everything you do gives you an achievement?
Yeah. It's like Achievement Hunter of the game or something.
Yeah,
like
that. So that was kind of like a joke. Well, this is kind of that same theory applied to solving puzzles. So, you know, the number of times you fall can be an input to help solve the puzzle. The number of times you die, the location you are in the screen. And as you get later into the game, it gets more and more crazy. So the gyroscopes in the Vita start getting incorporated. Even the camera for the Vita starts getting incorporated. And the challenge comes... from the fact that there is literally no instructions given to you. So we talk on the network a lot about how the best tutorial is the one that doesn't have boxes popping up saying, now you do this or press X to Y, you know?
Modal dialogue boxes that like stop you from progressing.
Yeah. Exactly. And Metrico is a case study in how to do that right. Down to the point that even the menus don't have text on it. It's all just icons. And it's very intuitive. And it's this perfect kind of ramp up where the first puzzles are very simple. And you can very easily find the thing that it's like, oh, okay, jumping is what you know changes this, or where I am on how I'm moving on the x-axis changes this. And then it kind of very slowly gets more complicated, but it never explicitly tells you here's how you manipulate the world. You always figure that out for yourself. And I've never seen anything like that before, and you guys can jump in if you have. But certainly I've never seen anything executed this well. Because while, you know, you increasingly just get all these different forms of input. So the checkpoints wind up becoming a form of input. You know, you wind up doing crazy things like spinning the Vita in your hand and taking, you know, walking around the house, taking pictures of different color objects. And as long as you're okay getting up and moving around a bit, which, you know, I'm totally fine with, because it's, you know, I'm looking for unique experiences, and this is definitely that. So it gets super complicated, but it ramps you up into it so that it feels like you're kind of gradually exploring a toolbox rather than having a Swiss Army knife thrown at you. and it's always just challenging enough, but that you're kind of sit there and go, okay, you know, I'm in a new level. I'll try jumping. Okay, that moves that over there. So I'll reset. Oh, okay. Resetting changes this one. So now I got to keep that in mind. And then, you know, I've tried moving left and right. That doesn't seem to do anything yet. What are the new forms of input that I can think of? And it's just constantly kind of applying, what are new ways I can kind of not abuse the system, but new creative ways I can use the inputs.
Yeah.
And the developers think of everything. Like, there's, it seems like if there is a way, a creative way that you can, you can use the Vita to solve the puzzle, they've built a puzzle around it.
Yeah.
So it, as a puzzle game, it is freaking phenomenal. The visual style and the concept behind it is really cool. So it looks like you're in an infographic.
Yeah.
You know, so everyone's used to seeing bar charts and pie charts and you know.
Everyone? I mean, you and I are.
Oh, yeah, you and I are. I would also say, just in terms of, you know, we're a culture of infographics. It's BuzzFeed. Yeah. It's Upworthy. It's whatever.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So. You know, so it just... specifically for me being in the world of business, it resonated, because it very much felt like, you know, this, the spreadsheets and the visualizations that I see being very dull, kind of jumping off the page. And that's a lot of fun.
It's a motif that I'm actually really excited to see making a bit of a comeback, which is like that early 32-bit era, like flat garage shading. Is what it's called, where every face of a geometric object just has one color applied to it, except it has like a gradient depending on where the light source is.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's an, like, there is not a wasted detail in this game. It is very, it's not, I don't even want to say it's sparse, but it has just enough detail to all the objects around you and nothing that it doesn't need, so that it feels very abstract but also kind of very warm and alive at the same time.
Yeah,
which is cool.
Neat color choices in this, for what I'm saying.
Yeah And each area of the game, there are six, kind of has its own palette, which is really cool to see. So those are all things I love about the game, but where it really, really shines, and it's going to sound sappy, but it really shines as a work of art and as a statement. It is exactly what I have been looking for when we talk about games as a medium for art. It is something that could only exist as a video game. It wouldn't work as a movie. And I feel like many of the things we hold up, like The Last of Us and BioShock, if you really pushed them on it, it would have, you know, it could work just as well as a movie. And this is something that is just wholly unique to being a game. You can't find, or it would just wouldn't work in any other context. And that is because of the way it invites you to kind of meditate on the information overload that's kind of become a part of everyone's life. So we've kind of come to accept it. I'm always on Twitter. I've always got the weather at my hip. You know, I've always got all these inputs constantly coming to me, and kind of devoid of context, they can be completely overwhelming and puzzling.
It's a human big data problem.
Exactly. Yeah. And the beautiful thing is that the game doesn't have some narrator who talks about this. It doesn't have characters that explore it through dialogue, just like you could in any other medium. It is literally the act of playing these levels and just increasingly saying, there's so much information, there's so many inputs I can try. There's, you know, you're kind of becoming this information overload, and it gets to the point where, you know, you get to a new area and just kind of button mash to see what happens, and then you start piecing it together. And it's still very fun to play, but it causes you to think about, you know, what you're doing, and especially getting into the physicality of using the Vita's gyroscopes. I put it on the Facebook page, but I'll say it again. It was just this sublime moment where I'm playing the game, and literally, I have to spin the Vita horizontally to keep a bridge up, while simultaneously moving the character across it on the left stick. And it's difficult to do. You can imagine it also looks really funny. So Jen kind of gets home and raises an eyebrow, like, what the hell are you doing? And I was like, no, you don't understand. I got to keep on spinning or else the bottom drops out. But it's really hard to make progress while I'm spinning. And we both just kind of looked at each other and just started laughing. And we're like, that's life in general. I just described life. Like, it was so perfect. And it's that kind of intersection of play and the game's thesis without ever relying on anything that looks like a different medium to get it across, which makes it so, so perfect. Yeah. And I won't spoil the end, but the end of it is the most, I could not, now that it, like, it's one of those just true insightful moments where now that I know the ending, I cannot imagine it being any other way. It's like, of course, the entire game was building to that. I should have seen it coming. It's so perfect, and yet I would never have seen it coming.
I feel like I almost have a guess of what it would be.
Yeah, I'm sure you know you can have your theories, and I recommend you should play this game if you have a Vita and find out. But it's just it is. I finished it, and I was just like, that's what I've been wanting. This is what I mean when I say I think games are, you know, a medium for art that can be unique from anything else. Yeah. And then I did the stupid thing and I went online and looked at the reviews.
Like ranges from like 5 to 6.
Yeah. And I was furious, and I had a major, like, not internet smart moment where I became a message board warrior and wrote way too much on way too many comment sections that no one is actually going to read. But essentially I was very disheartened because the universal complaint was, you know, it's so cliche. It was like, you know, there are so many inputs for the Vita. They did use them, but they never asked if they should use them. Yeah. And the complaint was like, well, it's awkward. And I'm like, yes, it's not a controller sitting in your hand. Mm-hmm. Like that it was intentional, though. Like, it builds perfectly into the thesis of the game. It was, you know, if you would just stop thinking about it as a product and can I get through this and just like I can every other game and think about it on its own terms, it's so perfectly executed. It fits so well, and I couldn't find anyone who got it. Yeah. So this is me obviously using this podcast as a soapbox. If you own a Vita, play this game. It's freaking free, and you can get through it in a weekend. And don't look at the reviews before you do. You're gonna love it. So
it might bias you negatively as I am trying to bias you positively.
Yeah.
I obviously don't mean that, but it's just hilarious. I don't know.
No, so I like end rant. I don't even know if we want to spend more time on it because I feel like I just spent 15 minutes ranting. It's so good.
So here's my question. I'm going to couch it in an observation that, you know, makes it sound really charming, which is it's kind of rare, and it's been a little bit, you know, of a rarity outside of like the Wii games, right? The best designed Wii games or the best designed games that center around hardware feel like, you know, the game fits the artifact and the physical connection to it like a glove, right? And that is a possible benefit to, you know, console and handheld games where, you know, not everything is the universal, like, okay, here's just a mouse and keyboard. Like, there's a degree of physicality to it that's very alluring. Mm-hmm. My question would be, like, for as awesome as that sounds, and for as many as, you know, for as many inputs as the PS Vita has, like, I could see it getting real abstruse real fast if there isn't adequate feedback. Like, if I have no idea what is affecting the things in the world, like what is actually making the relevant number go up. Like, you know, in the absence of any kind of like on screen kind of feedback, I could see it. I could actually see it being really frustrating, you know, and not in a like, I'm not sure what to do for this puzzle way. Like, you know, just like, oh, I need to play around with it and figure it out. But more like, oh, I actually, like, there are so many possible things that I could be doing that I don't have any idea what physically I should be doing.
Yeah,
let alone with the physical things in the game, right?
Yeah, I get where that could come from. I think I'll go back to the way that it kind of builds you into it. It gives you a heuristic for how to explore. So it's like when you get to any new puzzle, first jump, then walk left and right a little bit, then, you know, fire off a couple shots, then, you know, and the puzzles build on themselves in that way so that, you know, you'll eventually get to a new thing where you have to be a little bit creative. But the game should equip you very well to kind of have a heuristic for what to find. The other thing I'll say is another kind of gaming truism is that controls are at their best when you kind of forget about the controller in your hand, right?
Okay, so a game that asserts that you have a controller in your hands. I didn't let you complete your thought. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I was going to say this is I think the exception that proves the rule. And what, it's like well, because at
okay, certain what?
Yeah. I never know what that sentence means. So, I'm going to have to ask you A to defend your use of it and also the term in the abstract and in total. Like so you're going to get up on the cross for everybody who's ever said that.
Yeah.
Normally sentences are better if they make sense, but that particular sentence is the exception that
Fair. What I would say is there are points in this game where you are very aware of how you're handling your controller, right?
Yeah.
And normally I would completely agree that that is a very bad thing. And that is something that is not conducive to an experience. But they have found this specific set of circumstances where that works really well, that then illuminates why it's such a bad thing in any other context, thus being the exception that proves the rule. So it's like, oh, okay, this is actually really cool, the way I'm aware of the controller, the way I'm aware of the controller and aware of all the inputs that I'm giving. And I can see now how if any other game made me aware of the controller like this without having it be so meaningful, I would be really pissed off.
Yeah. The scale model of the Vatican that this prisoner made out of matchsticks is really impressive to me, and that is the exception to the rule that if you want the Vatican in your home, you should just take a picture of it, because what this guy did was really hard, and yeah.
What?
we all understand things in our own way.
Yeah, I'm probably not even making sense anymore. Play this damn game. I've at least by my passion, people don't need it. I should go play this game.
Well, you said so. It came out for free, and I imagine that a great many people are PS Plus members, so they probably are sitting on it in their backlog. So, yeah,
let's... yeah. I don't know. Do I want to say buy a Vita to play this game? I don't know. But this in Tearaway, I would say buy a Vita.
Yeah. Well, you offered to let me borrow it, and I said, I'm sorry, Suikoden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like, honestly, in David, or I don't know when Ben is going to be in town next, like, the only other thing I'm playing on my Vita right now is Spelunky, and I would happily give that up for a couple weeks so someone else could get this experience. Yeah. So
I might have to take you up on that and then be driven completely insane by Metrica. Yeah. I'm more, though, I'm still using the standard system. I'm not sure I could. Go over to Metric.
Do you have a Metric or an Imperial PS Vita?
All right, so that is like, 4 weeks worth of Dennis not being in the grind, pent up, and just shot belt fed style across the bow of this podcast. So
yeah,
that doesn't even make any sense. Someone else start talking. I feel like I've done too much.
Let's
Dennis Millard across the podcast.
I don't want to go off on a rant here. Man. David, how about you?
Sure. Yesterday I got contacted by two of our viewers, Murph Murphy, who hosts the Dork Knight podcast.
Yeah. Murph Murphy of podcasts. Yeah.
Yes. And Geo Law, who is just Geo Law.
Yeah, Geo Law of podcasts. Yeah.
To play Velvet Sunset? Sundown?
Yeah, Velvet Sundown. Sundance. Yes.
This is one of those games. It's really, really good. And also really, really bad.
Yeah.
The actual production values in it are abysmal.
Mm-hmm.
We've
talked about it before.
So, but they just released a new scenario that's a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not sure. Do you know, do they randomize who did it? Or, you know, do they randomize those sorts of aspects?
I have no idea. I played the scenario that was free about 3 weeks ago. I played it like 4 times. And so far as I saw, nothing changed except who I was in the scenario.
Okay, then, because I don't want to, you know, give away who did it if they don't change who did it. So I'll have to be purposely vague. But so basically, you're on the ship. You find that the captain's been murdered. You're trying to discover who did it and write in the logbook. And at least some of the people have evidence.
Why write it in the logbook?
Well, because the Coast Guard is coming. And, of course, the way the Coast Guard works is that when they come upon a crime scene, they check in the logbook, and whichever the majority of the...
They take a vote.
Yeah, whoever the majority like of the passengers said did it, that's who they send
execute
and yeah. give the death penalty to.
I would be curious if the person who did it knew that they did it and so was acting as a saboteur.
See, it's funny you should mention that because we universally wrote down Murph's name.
And even Murph did.
And the murderer was actually Geolaw. that ended up being a thing. It was kind of funny. I think one of my favorite things is that the plot ended up being that the murderer was a assassin sent by the president to kill the captain of this pleasure yacht.
As he will.
Yes. I loved Murph's immediate response of, thanks, Obama.
Okay, so here's my question for you. Did you know who Murph and Geolaw were during the course of the game? Because,
no.
Like, no? Okay. Did you have puppies in there who were talking in lead speak and calling you epithets for speaking in complete sentences?
No, actually, we
you
had
elitist.
a really good group. The most we had is there's one guy who like was a little bit with some of the like sexual references, maybe being like just flirting with the line.
Mm-hmm.
It almost came across as a thing where, like, I could have seen it being, like, if everyone else in it didn't play things straight, where that could have gone badly.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing a female character and said something my alibi, oh, I was with such and such. Oh, were you giving him a blowjob? It's like that, where that's like, that's not really appropriate, although at least you're kind of being in character.
Yeah.
Sort of, I guess.
I mean, it's a game about like...
It's just an asshole?
At least the scenario that I ran was about like drugs and stuff. Like,
fair.
You know, it is, you know, like a semi-noir-y kind of thing.
Sure. So there is nothing like that. And I would say I felt like this is a game that to me, like I got done with it and immediately like since then I've just been thinking about the metagame to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of that's kind of what the game is. And I feel like the one downside is no one in our game just like did the straight up like, oh, what's your evidence? Like, let's beat this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, everyone basically played their characters rationally, and that's probably not actually good role-playing.
Hmm.
So it ended up being we pretty evenly, pretty quickly, like, we're like, hey, this is the evidence I have, like, what do you got? Not because we're just like metagaming it, but just because like if you're a person who's, you know, rationally trying to solve a crime. That's kind of what you would do.
Yeah.
Although in real life, you probably wouldn't be that rational. So, but yeah, it was a neat experience.
I think that I don't know about rational or way too efficient. You were playing it constructively, which is kind of more than can be said for the experiences that I had. So that sounds like a net win. Like just any kind of constructive, play that goes into it. Like I don't know, maybe I would act like this in this situation.
I agree, and I felt like there were. Definitely some high points. So like the one thing I would say I feel like was not a good thing is that there's a hard 30-minute timer.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt like most of us had made our decision at about 15 minutes. On the other hand, some of the better role playing was the point where we had all decided Murph was guilty and Murph being like, no, this is why I'm not guilty. Like, I'm, here's my alibi that was entirely just him talking.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. And so that, that was some good, definitely some good role playing. Like us discussing why might that person have had the motive to kill?
Yeah.
So there are some good elements. I would really like to see, though, it right out at the start says, this is who you are. You're not the murderer or you are the murderer. Mm-hmm. I would like to see the hangover type approach to this scenario where no one knows if they're the murderer.
Oh, my gosh. And you're you're collectively trying to piece it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone instantly, within 5 minutes, becomes conspiracy Kiana.
Oh, so that is a fantastic idea. I'm also going to use it to tangent into a game idea that I had the other day, and I don't know where else to put it, so I'll put it here. But do a co-op shooter like Left 4 Dead,
mm-hmm.
With zombies, where it's actually fairly easy to actually get bitten.
Mm-hmm.
You don't immediately know that you've got it, but the player that's been bitten will kind of start getting signs and symptoms before anyone else is able to tell. During that period, they will get a huge boost to experience, and there'd be kind of some permanence where you can get better gear and stuff through between rounds. So you're kind of incentivized to hide it and keep playing as long as you can so that you can kind of get better gear. But at some random point, your character is going to turn and basically wipe out the rest of the party. And so you kind of incentivize hiding it. At the same time, you also incentivize kind of maybe if someone in a party that you jumped into has really good gear, does that mean that they were hiding it the last time? And should you trust them as much this time? And it kind of really kind of systematizes that distrust that you see in the zombie movies in a way that I haven't seen before. So, yeah.
So it's basically the thing spliced with Prisoner's Dilemma.
Spliced with Resident Evil Outbreak.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I was about ready to do the exact same thing. Huh.
But, yeah, I really, my big hope for this game, I would love it if they would release, some sort of SDK or, scenario editor kit. Maybe even sell it. Because, I really want to play this scenario where you have, a burnout school teacher, a brony, a CIA agent, and I don't know what else, a video game fan trying to solve a mystery.
God, that sounds like the worst. No, I mean, it's no. So you're saying that would be an entertaining game and an entertaining scenario. I agree with you, but I'm picturing being on that boat. It's I'll take my chances in the briny deep later.
Oh, hey, jet ski.
I forgot about my jet ski, guys.
I just in general, I do feel like this the whole scenario does call into question some things. Why does Obama hate the captain this much? Why, how does the Coast Guard know that we didn't all just decide that we really, really hate the this person?
Mm-hmm. What I would love to see is, okay, let's take this engine and let's write like a full-on Clue scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just basically make it like Clue the movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love Clue.
Yeah, I would say, why talk about, like, irrationality being the one thing we missed? Clue the movie is kind of what I thought of.
I would love a game where I can just recite Clue the movie line for line.
1+1+2+1.
I know. I was there.
God. Tim Curry, guys. I mean, like, you get Tim Curry and Christopher Lloyd in the same scene? Good night. Oh, man. The best casting. Michael McKean, come on.
And
weren't a number of the actors in that was kind of before they were, you know, famous, was my understanding.
Before Detective Gene Parmesan made it big.
Yeah. I forgot he was in that.
Yep.
Huh. So you don't need a game to recite it line for line. You just need a podcast.
Yes, you do. What do you think?
Next week, The Princess Bride.
What do you think this has been the whole time? I got to start it with Chinatown and Blade Runner. I can't carry this. I can't drive this boat forever, guys. The president's going to kill me. God, somebody write a scenario with us. I'm just vain enough to like maybe want to see that happen, but I am just self-conscious enough to be afraid of the result. Oh, man.
We all know David did it.
It's always David.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Good poll. I'm happy you had that experience, man. Have they brought back the text-to-speech?
Yes, they have. It's actually, on the whole, really well done. I mean, the different voices and accents. Yeah, it's pretty well done.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back in there for that. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So, on the opposite end of the art spectrum that Dennis was talking about, I played Watch Dogs and continued playing that.
It sounds like you're not too pleased.
Well, I'm going to finish it.
Yeah.
I'll make sure of that. And yeah, I totally OD'd on it over the weekend and did like a bunch of the side quests. And like, they're fine. It's basically like virtual chores. But I don't know. Like, none of the stuff they're doing is really that groundbreaking. And all their characters are like kind of dumb. And like, okay, so there's one character who's like in a hostage situation where he or she is being held against their will. And then they like start cracking wise halfway through the game, you know, like to the main character. And it's just like, all right, I'm not taking this seriously anymore. But
I'm not rescuing you.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the entire thing. I mean, yeah. So the characters are pretty paper thin. The world's fine. It's fine enough. There are not. It's kind of, I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, but it's kind of like the worst of both worlds, because like, Grand Theft Auto is good in the sense that they make like a pretty accurate map, but then they like don't even call it that city necessarily, so they have like plausible deniability. Whereas with this one, they explicitly call it Chicago, but then there's plenty of places that are not there when you look for them. So that's kind of a bummer, you know. But whatever. Riding on motorcycles is pretty fun.
Yeah. If you're riding around on anything but a motorcycle, you're a chump.
There is a really cool mechanic in it where people can invade you and you can invade them, sort of thing, where it's like you're hacking somebody, quote unquote. But the way it works is nice, because if you're invading somebody, you have to basically stay out of view. So your goal is to activate a hack when you're nearby them and have them not be able to find you for about 2 or 3 minutes. Have I talked about this mechanic before?
Yeah, you have.
All right. I listened to the last episode. You have.
All right. I'm treading old ground then. Yeah, so I don't have much new to say about it. I'll probably beat it in a week or two and then go play The Walking Dead. But it's, you know, if this game were like for $20 or like less, yeah, go for it. Play it for a weekend or something. But I don't know. Borrow it from a friend or something. I wouldn't pay full price for it, though. It's not that. Yeah.
So are you in a position where you can just like do a straight shot to the end? Like, is there a light in sight and you've just gotten sidetracked with the side quests, or?
I'm like at end of act two, maybe, and there's five acts. So unless it's like most games where the first acts are really long and then the last acts are really short, which it might be, then then I don't know. I still probably have a decent chunk to go, but I don't know, whatever. Like one of their messages or whatever is like sex slavery is bad. It's like
controversial ground.
Yeah. Slow down, watchdogs.
I don't know if I'm ready for this level of subtlety. I'm down. I'm very receptive to that idea.
But it's like, that's obvious.
How do you communicate that in game? I mean, are you just like finding traffickers and like hacking them to death?
It's on a billboard that you drive by. No, they work it into the storyline. So it's, it spans a couple of missions. Whatever. Somebody will find out if they play it. So.
Yeah. Cool. Have you had anything top the hiding in the car while you hack someone moment? No, that was the best.
That was the coolest, because they were running by me so many times. It felt so rewarding. But yeah. There was one that was cool where somebody was hacking me, and it was like a construction-ish area. And I immediately like got to high ground to try and get like a bird's eye view to see, find them. And I accidentally fell down a story to the second story, which you can't really get to. Like, you can only go up to the third story or stay on the first story, and the person was like right there, so I was like, oh, okay, and then just killed them. But it's also a lot of fun too. You can one of the weapons is like a grenade launcher, so like if you can't find the person, you just start letting nades loose, man. You just shoot everything around you. And so
burn down Chicago to kill the cockroaches.
Yeah, pretty much.
One day a hard rain's gonna come.
Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
That can be pretty fun, though, because you get to see somebody act very frightened, so that's cool. Nice.
Huh.
Yep, that's all I have to say about that.
Cool. I think you're the only one left.
Yes, I am. So I've been head down on Suikoden 2 for Watch Out for Fireballs, and thus have been unable to play many games for our purposes. I will say, though, I've checked out Swing Copter.
Okay.
Which is the follow up to Flappy Bird from Dong Nguyen, the guy who developed Flappy Bird, it is really hard even after the patch that he released to make it less hard. So it's one of those things, like, I read text to try and understand what was going on in it, didn't understand it, and then I played about 20 rounds, didn't understand it, and then finally it clicked. I'm going to do the best that I can to summarize exactly what happens in this. So you're like a little dude who's got a helicopter hat on. He's adorable. It's like the same kind of fidelity of sprite work that's in Flappy Bird. And you propeller upward, except you also move horizontally in the direction that you're facing. And when you tap the screen, you reverse the direction that you're facing. So you kind of make this sine wave across the screen as you move vertically up, and you're trying to avoid these pipes and these kind of like swinging hammers on chains that are on the side of them. Effectively, what this does is like it takes Flappy Bird, makes it vertical, and instead of gravity just going in one direction and you are affecting it by you're fighting against it by a fixed amount every time you tap, what it is you are shifting gravity to the left or the right every time you tap, and the swinging of the hammers doesn't add a lot. I imagine it amplifies as you progress, but it makes it so that the barriers that you're trying to pass are not static.
So is it? It's essentially a kind of a vertical form of
a little bit. Yeah. Except I would say that it is far less forgiving than because your acceleration is really quick, and it's hard to find like a really good rhythm that doesn't just send you flying off one side of the screen.
Are you accelerating, is it the actual acceleration a big thing? It's not like just velocity.
Yeah, it's like you go from, so you can just like tap it and keep yourself at equilibrium, you know, and keep it roughly like in a smooth line as you move left and right to get through these gaps. It really is the acceleration, because if you hold off on like just a second, you leave that sweet spot where you're moving real slow and you just kind of like just slam into the side of the screen.
Sure.
Yeah, it totally is. So the thing that they changed in the patch, at least that I noticed, is the distance to the first first obstacle. By which I mean, pre-patch, the first obstacle was right on the screen, visible with you when you started. So if you tapped the button and you were facing in the wrong way, odds were really good that you would just slam into it. And you just didn't have any real time to correct and like get yourself in a good flow. By giving you a little bit of runway, you trade being able to see where it is, so you kind of have to, you know, guess. But like that runway actually lets you get on a solid line, like with the pace of your taps. So you have a better chance of being in control, right? So in a weird way, it's like having a longer barrel on a gun. Like if you're shooting, you're like a real short. Like, oh, it just doesn't have a lot of room to get like a good velocity on it, so it's just going to go all over the place. However, you know, that again, I keep using the word runway because it's apt. That longer runway actually gets you headed in a constructive direction.
It's also apt because it's a helicopter.
True.
Well, I guess helicopters don't really need runways, so it's not. Never mind.
Yeah, kind of the point. It's like a jetcopter. Yeah.
So, does the game have a end? Do you know?
No, I think it's like Flappy Bird. The end is, you know, how long you can go without dying. It's structured very much in the same way, down to the point. I think that the scoreboard is the same.
Okay.
My current record, which I got to tonight, was 10.
Double digits.
I know, right? In fact, I played until I got to double digits because I was not going to sit there with a 6 on my score. God damn it. Yeah. But you notice the same thing like you did get with Flappy Bird, which is like you'll find yourself on runs. Like I will have a handful of successful runs because I'm kind of in the flow or in the zone with it. And then when it runs dry, it runs real dry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
So if I were to quantify this, I would say it's like Flappy Bird plus to a certain extent, like insofar as it takes it and makes it, you know, more of what that is, I suppose. You know, I can't speak to whether it's more or less broken than Flappy Bird. And I think that I feel a little bit more comfortable talking about it on a show because I haven't heard that much about it. I think that zeitgeist may have passed. So it's not going to be as much of a meme as Flappy Bird was, just because it's not Flappy Bird. I wanted more Flappy. Where's the birds? I'm entitled to my
bird
birds.
Where's the bird?
God damn it. Yeah.
I feel like is like bird place based gameplay now going to be a thing for the level?
Maybe. I like birds a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
I never knew this about you.
Are you kidding me?
Ornithology?
I'm not kidding.
Oh. Yeah, no, I like birds. I dig them. I can identify a bird when I see it.
Why? Like, why don't you like birds, Ben?
I don't dislike birds.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
It sounded like Damnation by Weak Praise. Do you want to get something off your chest?
This is just a surprise.
Name me one species of bird that is not just like blue jay or robin.
Velociraptor.
That's what I thought.
So I feel weird coming out and saying that because like I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert on birds. I just like birds. Aesthetically and behaviorally, they're interesting to me.
Conceptually, I can get down with birds.
Yeah, I tolerate them. That's called duck feed because I like ducks. Like that's a part of it. Oh man, I don't have to defend my bird love to you folks.
I'm just saying, you think you know a guy, man.
And he goes and says that thing about liking a bird.
Yeah.
Guys, we've been going for a good long while. Let's land this bird.
Yeah. Delirium is setting in.
That's what about it up.
I'm talking about my beer, of course. No.
Man, if you're drinking, why are you wasting that good beer on us?
I know.
the credit.
So that was level number 73. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And thank you so much for putting in those free play responses. That's it's always great when people come out in force like that. What am I thinking of here? So this is, if you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, which is likely a Friday for you, you still have time to get in on the August Duck Feed Live event, where my brother Chris Ross is going to be joining us. Bess, I mean, me and Gary on a video show. I'm real nervous.
What is that?
About the way that's just
the dynamics.
Yeah. No, like not about them mixing up. I just, well, yeah, about them ganging up on me. Because
do you need a buddy, Cole?
I am a ridiculous and farcical figure in most aspects of life, and so I can see this being real. Whew, I can see this being excuses for a lot of people to say what they really think, and I don't know if I'm ready for that.
I technically get to write in a question for this. Do I need to be like, hey, Chris and Gary, both of you, I want to hear at least a paragraph on how great Cole is.
I can't put myself in on that. In fact, I have to say, wink, wink, don't do that. Like, don't do that just for me. Like, if you're interested in that, but I don't think that's what the people want. I think people want to see me taken down a peg. So that is for backers on the Patreon at patreon.com/duckfeedtv of $5 or more per month. And I'm anticipating fireworks. Yeah. Other than that, specific to this show, you can like us on Facebook and leave ratings or reviews. It's been a minute since we've had a review, so I'd appreciate if you could get on there and do that if you haven't already. Although I understand if you're not a person who enjoys the Apple experience. We'll not force you to do it, but we say it from time to time, and by from time to time, I mean every episode.
Let's be clear. We could force you to do it. We have ways.
Like, we could just not do the show until we get another episode, but I don't want to do that because the show is fun to do. I know, right? It's it's a repulsive notion.
I was like, I need this.
Yeah.
The viewers.
Yeah. But yeah, so just watch out for the multiplayer responses and everything on Tuesdays. And in general, we're very happy that you're here listening. I appreciate all of you for taking the time, because I know that life is crazy and sometimes it can be a little bit difficult to fit these things in. But it's really great that you're out there responding to us and participating. Yeah,
definitely.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's do the Twitters and then bounce. I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I continue to be David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And until next time, oh no, it's a volcano for military reasons.
Is it fair for me to say that
I'll let David go?
Okay, David, just take it and don't say I was going to say.
When the problem is,
just start with the problem is, okay.